The following narration is from William Greenhill's commentary on the book of Ezekiel. William Greenhill lived from 1591 to 1671. He was an English nonconformist clergyman, independent minister, and member of the Westminster Assembly. At the age of 13, he attended the University of Oxford. 8th of June, 1604, he graduated in 1609, a reading of Ezekiel chapter 8. And it came to pass in the sixth year, in the sixth month, on the fifth day of the month, as I sat in mine house, and the elders of Judah sat before me, that the hand of the Lord God fell there upon me. Then I beheld, and lo, a likeness as the appearance of fire, from the appearance of its loins even downward, fire, and from his loins even upward as the appearance of brightness, as the color of amber. And he put forth the form of a hand, and took me by a lock of mine head. And the Spirit lifted me up between the earth and the heaven, and brought me in the visions of God to Jerusalem, to the door of the inner gate that looks toward the north, where was the seat of the image of jealousy which provokes to jealousy. And behold, the glory of the God of Israel was there, according to the vision that I saw in the plain. Then he said unto me, Son of man, lift up thine eyes now the way toward the north. So I lifted up mine eyes away toward the north, and behold, northward at the gate of the altar, this image of jealousy in the entry. He said furthermore unto me, Son of man, seest thou what they do, even the great abominations that the house of Israel commits here? That I should depart far off from my sanctuary? But turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abominations. And he brought me to the door of the court, and when I looked, behold, a hole in the wall. Then he said unto me, Son of man, dig now in the wall. And when I had dug in the wall, behold, a door. And he said unto me, Go in and behold the wicked abominations that they do here. So I went in and saw, and behold, every form of creeping things and abominable beasts, and all the idols of the house of Israel portrayed upon the wall round about. And there stood before them 70 men of the ancients of the house of Israel. And in the midst of them stood Jaazaniah, the son of Shaphan, with every man his censer in his hand, and a thick cloud of incense went up. Then said he unto me, Son of man, hast thou seen what the elders of the house of Israel do in the dark, every man in the chambers of his images? For they say, The Lord seeth us not, the Lord has forsaken the earth. He said also unto me, Turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abominations that they do. Then he brought me to the door of the gate of the Lord's house, which was toward the north, and behold, there sat women weeping for Tammuz. Then said he unto me, Hast thou seen this, O son of man? Turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abominations than these. And he brought me into the inner court of the Lord's house, and behold, at the door of the temple of the Lord, between the porch and the altar, were about 25 men, with their backs towards the temple of the Lord, and their faces toward the east. And they worshipped the sun toward the east. Then he said unto me, Hast thou seen this, O son of man? Is it a light thing to the house of Judah that they commit the abominations which they commit here? For they have filled the land with violence, and have returned to provoke me to anger, and lo, they put the branch to their nose. Therefore will I also deal in fury, mine eyes shall not spare, neither will I have pity. And though they cry in mine ears with a loud voice, yet I will not hear them. William Greenhill's commentary on verses 7 to 12, And he brought me to the door of the court, and when I looked, behold, a hole in the wall. Then said he unto me, Son of man, dig now in the wall, and when I digged in the wall, behold, a door. And he said unto me, Go in, and behold the wicked abominations that they do here. These verses contain the second part of the prophet's new vision, where, first, you have a new discovery of more idolatry in verses 7, 8, 9, and beginning of verse 10. Secondly, a description of it in verses 10 and 11. Thirdly, the ground of all their vile practices, verse 12, they say, The Lord seeth not. I shall open what has any difficulty, and so give you the observations. The door of the court, another door than that in verse 3. It was the door of the Levites, or priests' court, into which none might come that were not of the tribe of Levi. And herein the sin of the priests and the people is aggravated, that the priests allowed any to come in there who should not, and that the people dared not venture into that holy place or bring their abominations so near the Lord. Dig in the wall, and behold, a door. The door of the court being shut, he spies a hole, and upon command, digging in that, finds another door about the gates of the wall chambers. Ezekiel 40 verse 10. For the doorkeepers and Levites who had their weekly courses of administration. 1 Chronicles 23:28, Luke 1:8. And it is likely this door in the wall was a back door by which the priests, Levites, and others entered into their chambers and chapels of imagery secretly. And our prophet entering in at this door sees their gross and brutish idolatry. There they had pictures upon the walls, the forms of all things which creep, and of beasts. God had forbidden the Jews to make themselves any images. But now they not only had images, set them in private, but also in public and holy places and those of the basest sort. Crocodiles, cats, moles, beetles, which creatures the Egyptians worshipped, they had portrayed there. Abominable beasts. The Hebrew is of animal abomination. No creatures of God are abominable in themselves. Some prohibited by the law were unclean for such and such uses, but yet good in themselves. The picturing of them and others made them abominable. And I conceive abomination refers rather to the form of the creature which they worshipped than to the creature itself. And may be read thus. Every form of creeping things and of beasts is abomination, and secondarily the creatures abominable for their form's sake, which were worshipped. 70 men of the ancients of the house of Israel. In Numbers 11:16, God bids Moses gather 70 of the elders together, which done, he joined them with Moses to help him to bear the burden of the people. These 70 made a standing senate, or their Sanhedrin. There were 6 out of every tribe, which amounted to 72, but were called the 70, as in Luke 10:1. They are called the 70 disciples, but in the Syriac it is 72. These met in a great court near the sanctuary called Sanhedrin, from their sitting there, and this was the great council to which they were admitted, those that were wise, afraid to sin, meek and able. Their qualifications are set down in Exodus 18:21 and Deuteronomy 1:13. And to these hard and weighty matters were brought to judge of as defection of tribes, false prophets, war, and such like. Now this council, these 70, were so degenerate that they were become idolaters and offered incense to idols. Some think that they were all priests, because every man was with his censer in his hand, but then it should have been 70 men of the tribe of Levi, not of the ancients of Israel. And besides, it is known that the Sanhedrin consisted not of all priests, but some out of every tribe. In the midst of them stood Jaazaniah, the son of Shapham. Who this Jaazaniah was is uncertain. Diodate, in his notes upon the place, is mistaken. He saith the name is nowhere else mentioned, whereas you shall find it twice more in 2 Kings 25:23, Jeremiah 35:3. There were a number of Jaazaniahs. This in the prophets is said to be the son of Shaphan, who it is probable was that Shaphan, the scribe in Josiah's days, 2 Kings 22:12, grandfather or uncle to Gedaliah, whom the king of Babylon left governor in Judea. So that Gedaliah and Jaazaniah were near of kin, of great place, whether a priest or some chief ruler. He stood in the midst of the 70 as being principal, for the chief in wisdom they set over the rest of the Sanhedrin, and called him Nasi, the prince, they sitting in the form of a half moon before him or about him. His name signifies hearkening of or to the Lord, whom had he remembered, he would not have been found in such service. A thick cloud of incense went up. In the Hebrew, it is an abundance of a cloud of incense. That is, the smoke of the incense was so thick that it seemed a cloud. Incense or perfume was made a sweet and costly thing, and was a token of worship, yea, chief worship, saith Calvin. Anciently they burnt sweet wood, and with the smoke thereof worshipped their gods. It is like the heathens learned it from Moses, who was appointed of God to burn incense to him, Exodus 25:6, and Exodus 30:7-8. The entrails of beasts, boiled or roasted, the heathens did burn unto their gods at first, but afterwards used incense. Tully saith that to the statue set up for Caius Marius, they burned frankincense or incense, the wax candles which were in honor thereof. In the primitive times, when they forced the Christians to idolatry, they would have them throw a little frankincense into the fire, which was a token of worship. Observation 1. That idolaters oft times act closely and cover up their works from the eyes of the world. They had their imagery in chambers and secret places. It was walled up and unobvious to most eyes. Some covers and pretenses such persons always have for their superstitions and idolatries. They cover them with their good intentions, great devotion, religion of their forefathers, such as have some pomp and state. There are in them such objects as help their memories and affections. There is, say they, some truth, some good, and the rest may be borne with those that worship. So, prosper, and are at ease in their way, they meet not with those temptations and troubles others do. Observation number 2. Such ways of wickedness cannot be carried so close, but there will be some espial of them. Let them make walls to cover them up, yet Providence will order it so that there will be a hole in the wall, some crevice to look through at and discern their doings. The mystery of iniquity could not work so closely, but it was discerned. Peter Suave found a hole in the walls of Rome and discovered the Pope's practices to hinder reformation of heirs in the Council of Trent, the secret plottings and conveyances to bring in popery amongst us by Jesuits and others, were spied, detected, and in due time disappointed. Observation 3. To find out exactly the great evils and abominations in states and churches, much pains must be taken. The prophet must dig and dig in the wall. Their idolatry was fortified and walled up, and clear knowledge of it could not be attained without great toil. The popish idolatry has been so walled up by Romish champions that it cost our worthies and prophets, Whittaker, Reynolds, Perkins, Ames, and others, much digging to discover the ill-favoredness of their imagery. Their strong arguments are answered, and popery has a black face. And not only in this particular must there be digging to find out the mischief thereof, but also in others. It has cost this Parliament digging to find out the evil and prelacy and malignancy in the land. Observation 4. Such is the force of superstition and idolatry that men engaged therein go further and grow worse. They were not content with the image of jealousy, but they had forms of creeping things and abominable beasts to worship. They multiplied abominations. Ezekiel 16:51, and had painted gods upon the wall round about, or as the Hebrew is, about and about, double ranks of gods. Superstition knows no end. We were of late in his kingdom, got into the paths of superstition, and walked daily further and further therein. They had gotten all gods but the true God. Observation 5. Idolatry is a grievous sin. It is an abomination, and the Lord therefore calls a prophet to see what they did, that he might be a witness of so great and grievous a sin as that was. And the grievousness of it lies in this, number 1. That they had forsaken the true God. Number 2, had changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into the forms of creeping things, beasts, and abominations. Number 3, that they had brought them into the holy place, even where God's holy ordinances ought to be. Number 4, that they had driven God out of his holy place. Number 5, that the chief men were drawn away and offered incense to those dunghill gods. Number 6, that they said, "The Lord seeth us not." Number 7, that they look for help from those helpless gods. Observation 6. Note here that idolatry infatuates wise men. The ancients of Israel were become idolaters, those that were the counselors and judges. They should have maintained the true worship of God, encouraged others by their counsel and example not to cleave to false worship, but to the true and living God. They should have punished idolaters with death according to the law of Moses. Even they become brutish. They worship forms of creeping things. They disclaim the infinite, glorious, great, holy, and wise God, even the God of Israel, and adore bats, moles, and so on. a just hand of God upon men, to whom, because they receive not the truth with the love of it, or the love of the truth, God sends strong delusion that they should believe lies. Observation 7. There is consent in wickedness and false worship. 70 of them are of one mind. They take censers and offer incense to base dunghill gods. All the people break off their earrings to make a calf. In Psalm 83, verse 5, they have consulted together with one consent. The Hebrew is with one heart, and are confederate against thee. Hearty consultation and hearty confederation against God and his worship. Revelation 13:3, and all the world wondered after the beast and worshipped the dragon. Observation 8. See the cunning of idolaters. The priests, that most usually are first in such ways, they draw in the great ones to countenance their ways. They let them offer incense with their own hands, which was a violence to the priesthood, and they do all in darkness. And so objections may be prevented, some great mysticalness be conceded to be in those ways, which may breed reverence and esteem of them in the hearts of lower persons. Observation 9. Idolatrous and superstitious persons are expensive to maintain their worship. Here was much incense burnt to their idols. A thick cloud went up. And as Exodus 32:3, where their idolatry first began after their coming out of Egypt, how prodigal were they of their jewels and earrings to make a false god. Egyptian jewels given them for adornation, they make an object of adoration. And when they had made them golden and silver gods, of which God complains, Ezekiel 16:17, their prodigality ceased not there, but they were at daily charges to honor and maintain them. They decked the high places with garments of divers colors. They covered the gods with broidered garments. They bestowed oil, incense, fine flour, and honey upon them. Yea, they sacrificed their sons and daughters unto them. Ezekiel 16:18-20. The papists are profuse in their superstitious worship. The churches of some saints are so stuffed with vowed presents and memories that they are fain to hang their cloisters and churchyards with them. It is the nature of idolatry and adultery to be prodigal. If adulterers think nothing too much for their harlots, idolaters think nothing too much for their false worship. Observation 10. God appeals to man in a case of great ingratitude and wrong done to him. They were unthankful for all the great things God had done. They gave that honor which was due to the divine majesty to images and idols, whereupon saith God to Ezekiel, Son of man, hast thou seen what the ancients of Israel do? Judge thou of it. Should not they, being aged, lifted up to honor, invested with power, prevent and punish such sins in a church and state as here are committed? Should not they counsel and lead others by their example to serve me, the only true and living God? Should it not be so? I appeal to thee to make judgment of it. But they do otherwise. Are not the ancients become idolaters? Have they not chambers of imagery? Are there not censers in their hands? Seest thou not the smoke of the incense going up? What do you think? Are not these worthy of death themselves for these sins? Who should put others to death for the like? Speak your mind. I appeal to you in this case. The injury is so notorious you cannot but condemn them and justify me. It is frequent in Scripture for God in such cases to appeal to man and other creatures. Isaiah 5:3, Jeremiah 2:12, Deuteronomy 32:1. Appeals are relief to the hearts of those that are wronged and grieved, and God in this case deals after the manner of men. Observation 11. False worship is a work of darkness. Idolaters have corners, chambers, dark places. These 70 were in the dark and did the works of darkness. Idolatry is called a work of the flesh, Galatians 5:19-20. And all works of the flesh are darkness. Truth loves the light, but error and iniquity darkness, John 3:20. Evildoers hate the light. They hide up themselves in their ways. These 70 had power in their hand, yet they dared not justify their works openly, but carried all closely. But how close soever sinners are, God sees them. These words in the chambers of his imagery, some render it in the secret of their own imaginations, which shows that whatever are the thoughts, workings, and imaginations of men's hearts, the Lord sees them and can discover them. Idolaters have strong thoughts in their hearts of the ways they are in, of some mystery and excellency in them, which the vulgar don't know. But let men be ignorant of them, the Lord sees them. Isaiah 29:15. Men think to hide their counsels, thoughts, practices from the Lord, but he sees the deceitfulness of their hearts, the wickedness in them. And because they carry things close, he searches, he tries them what they are. Jeremiah 17:9-10. Observation 12. That atheism, unbelief and pride are the causes of men's going out from God and falling to idolatrous and other sinful vile practices. For they say, the Lord seeth us not, he has forsaken the earth. Atheism denies his presence, infidelity his assistance, and pride carries them out for help elsewhere, and tacitly lays the blame upon God. He has left the caring of us. We are in the midst of dangers and must seek for protection from some deity or other. And if it be a sin, he may thank himself. If he had not forsaken us, we would not have forsaken him, chosen any other, but we are necessitated to it. Here is the pride of idolaters, and in Jeremiah 18:15, all these are included in one word. Because my people have forgotten me, they have burned incense to vanity. They forgot God and hereupon became atheistical, unbelieving, and proud. Ezekiel 13:14. He said also unto me, turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abominations that they do. Then he brought me to the door of the gate of the Lord's house, which was toward the north, and behold, there sat women weeping for Tammuz. Here you have a third part of the prophet's new vision, containing yet greater abominations than before, which is set out. First, from the place, the door of the gate of the Lord's house. It was the priest's court, and at the entrance into the Lord's house, and the nearer they sinned to the Lord's house, the greater was the wickedness. Secondly, the nature of the abomination. Women sat there weeping for Tammuz. It was not according to law for any to be in that court at that gate, but priests only. Now here were women and women sitting and weeping, and that for Tammuz, which were greater abominations than what went before. What or who this Tammuz was must be open to you. The word is not mentioned elsewhere. Some rabbis say this Tammuz was a hollow idol with eyes of lead under which they used to put fire, and the heat melting the leaden eyes, the idol seemed to weep, and so moving compassion in the women, they became co-weepers with it. But the text doesn't say the idol wept, but that the women wept. Schindler saith the idols had their prophets, and this Tammuz was one of the idolatrous prophets, whom the king slew. In honor of him was set up an idol, so called from his name, or because on the first day of the month, Tammuz, they did celebrate his festivity. The 17th day of this month they fasted for the breach of the tables of the law, and on the first feasted and brake the law itself most abominably. Women sat there. These women were the she-priests of Isis, and did wear linen garments and perform many of their wretched rites in woven houses, of which you read in 2 Kings 23:7. The word hangings in the Hebrew is houses. Women that lived in filthy houses did weave those houses or tents to cover the lewdness of other women when they came to honor Tammuz. There dwelt near to this idol youth, the servants of Tammuz, which were for all naughtiness. And now at the temple was practiced sodomy and all uncleanness. There were houses of sodomites by the house of the Lord. Weeping for Tammuz, for his death, many tears were bestowed upon this idol. And being the same with Adonis, is etymologized thus, the Lord or God of sorrow. And Theocritus calls him the God honored with tears, and also the God worthy of threefold love, which they express not only in their tears, but in their vilest adoration. Observation 1. That when men leave the true God and his worship, they fall upon and fetch in any gods, inventions, and abominations are increased. If they have gods of their own making, that sufficeth not, but they will have gods other nations have made. Therefore it is said, turn thee yet again, and you shall see greater abominations. The Jews, after once they fell to idolatry, were not contented with one or two gods, but had a multiplicity of gods. Baal-Peor of the Moabites, Numbers 25:3, Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Zidonians, 1 Kings 11:5, Chemosh, the god of the Moabites, 1 Kings 11:33, Meleom, the abomination of the Ammonites, 2 Kings 23:13. Molech, the abomination of Ammon, 1 Kings 11:7. Beelzebub, the god of Ekron, 2 Kings 1:2. Baal, 1 Kings 16:31. The gods of Syria and the gods of the Philistines, Judges 10:6. The gods of the children of Seir, 2 Chronicles 25:14. The gods of Damascus, 2 Chronicles 28:23. These, with other gods they had, yet were not content with them, but sought after more. The gods of Edom, 2 Chronicles 25:20. Thus is it with Rome. They are not satisfied and settled in their old way, but still multiply saints, orders of friars, Jesuits, articles of faith, and an infinity of intricate, dumb ceremonies. Observation 2. That false worship and filthiness usually go together. Spiritual and corporal whoredom, idolatry and adultery. These she-servants of Isis wept for Tammuz. They were wanton, lewd with the men that looked to this idol. Houses for all uncleanness were near the temple and this idol. Observation 3. Idolatry spreads to both sexes. Not only men are drawn away to that sin, but the women also. They sat before Tammuz. Idolaters fetch in many gods, he-gods and she-gods. Ashtoreth was a goddess, and the Grecians think Tammuz or Asuria was not a man, but their goddess Ceres, and these gods or goddesses draw persons of all sorts and sexes to them. Jeremiah 44:9, their wives are taxed for their idolatry. Observation 4. Women could weep for Tammuz, Osiris, who for his filthiness justly suffered. They supposed him wronged, and therefore laid out their hearts for him. How much more should we weep for the great and glorious God who unjustly suffers by all sinners in the world? They wept for an idol, for remembrance of a wicked wretch, when their tears did neither themselves nor the idol good. If we weep for God in his wrong, it will please him and profit us. David did so. Psalm 119:136. Rivers of waters run down mine eyes because they keep not thy law. Observation 5. Idolatry, which is a shameful thing, makes persons shameless. These persons discovered their nakedness to the idol and offered themselves to commit filthiness with Tammuz. Who could have believed that the Jews, instructed in the law of Moses, would have fetched in such an idol, so beastly, from the Egyptians, and that Jewish women should so far forget the law of God and the law of nature as to prostitute themselves in so obscene a manner to so filthy an idol as this was? But idolatry besots, and God in justice gives up to a reprobate sense. Romans 1:25, 26, 28. Idolatry is shameful. Hosea 10. They went to Baal Peor and separated themselves unto that shame. It was a shameful idol and made themselves shameless. For it is judged they did also before this idol discovered their nakedness. Among papists, where idolatry is in countenance, modesty is in disgrace. Priests and friars strive to exceed each other in impudence, and what elsewhere would not be tolerated, in Italy is in high honor, and what in other places a loose person would be ashamed to confess, that priests and friars there refrain not openly to practice. Verses 15 and 16, Then said he unto me, Hast thou seen this, O son of man? Turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abominations than these. And he brought me into the inner court of the Lord's house, and behold, at the door of the temple of the Lord, between the porch and the altar, were about 25 men with their backs towards the temple of the Lord, and their faces toward the east, and they worshipped the sun toward the east. In verse 15 is a transition to the last part of the vision, lying in verse 16. In this abomination, yet greater than the former, of the image of jealousy, the mixed forms of beasts and creeping things, then Tammuz is described, first, from the place in general, the inner court, more particularly the door of the temple, and yet more especially between the porch and the altar, number 2, the persons with their number, 25 men. Number 3, their posture, with their backs towards the temple of the Lord and their faces toward the east. Number 4, their act, they worshipped the sun. This idolatry was in the temple itself, enacted by the chiefest persons. It is conceived these 25 were the king and his council. There were 2 tribes left, and 12 out of each with the king made up that number. It is thought that these 25 are mentioned again in chapter 11, verse 1, where 2 princes are named, and therefore probable to be the king and his nobles, the chief and heads of the people. These stood between the porch and the altar, which was near to the sanctum sanctorum, and where the priests used to weep and pray, especially in times of common calamities, Joel 2:17, with their backs toward the temple of the Lord, and so on. The temple was so built that the sanctum sanctorum was in the western part of it, the entrance into it in the eastern part. And when any service was done by the people or priests, in prayer or sacrifice, they did it with their faces westward towards the ark and holiest of holies, and their backs were eastward, which the Lord in wisdom ordered to be so, that he might prevent eastern and sun worship, which was the practice of the Gentiles, whereupon saith Jehovah, chapter 31:26, if I beheld the sun when it shined, if I looked upon it to adore it as others did, it was a practice even then. Observation 1. It is wisdom not to give way to any sin, but to stop sin in the birth, crush it in the conception. You see what abominations after abominations, greater and greater, come in here. Lesser sins make way for greater superstition, for idolatry, yea, the worst of idolatry and other sins. Observation 2, that the nearer destruction, the worse they grow in church and state. All was out of order, great confusion amongst them. The land was filled with corruptions, the image of jealousy. Chambers of imagery, houses for stews were about the temple. Tammuz, a most abominable idol, set up, adored in it. Women were allowed to come there and do shameful things. The ancients offer incense to those who were no gods. The kings and nobles come into the priest's court, turn their backs upon God. No priest had any zeal for God to reprove these things, but were deeply in themselves. The land filled with violence, their abominations greater and greater, and judgment at the door. Observation 3, that in corrupt times great persons are generally very profane. The 25 turn their backs upon God, slight him in his worship, disgrace, reproach, the same. What greater indignity could they do to God than to come into his temple, to the holy place, and then turn their backs upon him and worship the sun in his presence? It is as if a woman should cast off her husband and commit lewdness with another man in front of him. When Jeremiah's roll was read, the king cut and cast it into the fire, which others consented to, Jeremiah 36:23-24. After he and his agents cut in pieces the vessels of the house of God, shut up the doors of the temple, and would allow the Lord to have no sacrifice, no incense, no priest. And when God distressed him for his wickedness, he sinned more and more, 2 Chronicles 26:22-24. Belshazzar and his princes drank wine in the sacred bowls of the temple and praised their idol gods, Daniel 5:2-3. And not only in corrupt times are great ones profane, but even in reforming times, Nehemiah 13:17. The nobles of Judah profaned the Sabbath and increased wrath. Such profane acts God takes very seriously and will requite it in their kind. They have turned unto me the back and not the face, Jeremiah 32:33. And therefore I will show them the back and not the face in the day of their calamity, Jeremiah 18:17. Observation 4. The kings and princes are not to be patterns to us in point of religion and worship. If we will follow them, we may suddenly be led into idolatry. Here 25, the chief of the city and land, and they turn their backs upon the true God and his worship, and choose heathenish religion and heathenish practices. The people were not bound to follow them. Great ones soonest go out of God's way, 2 Chronicles 24:19-20. After Jehoiada's death, the princes came and bowed to Joash, gave ill counsel, and with them he hearkened, and they together leave the house of the Lord his worship, and fell to false worship. Jeroboam and all the kings and princes in Israel after him went the wrong way, and never pleased or truly served God for hundreds of years together. We must not follow great ones in matters of religion, and say we will be of that religion the king or parliament are of. Great ones do greatly mistake in the things of God and religion. The princes of this world neither knew the wisdom of God nor the Lord Christ, 1 Corinthians 2:7-8. And to this day few of them do know the truth, for not many wise, mighty, or noble are called, 1 Corinthians 1:26. Therefore fetch your religion from Christ and the apostles who gave out truths which came down from heaven, which embraced will sanctify you and fit you for heaven. Observation 5. That adoration towards the East was taken up from the heathen. The Jews had it from them, and it was displeasing to God, and that practice crept in amongst Christians. Tertullian saith, it was a known thing that the Christians prayed with their faces toward the East, but the heathen stumbled at it and said the Christians' God was the sun. Some fathers held in an apostolical tradition that Christians should pray with their faces that way, but traditions of fathers are no warrant for worship or postures in it. We have nothing from Christ or apostles leading us to do so, and from others we may not take up such a practice, though ancient, holy, and learned. Christ and his apostles were before them, more holy, more able than they, and in their writings and practices we find no such thing. The papists and some among us do yet plead for Eastern worship and would have Christians look that way because paradise is that way, because Christ is crucified with his face westward, because he who is the light of the world ascended to heaven there and shall come again there. These are weak grounds to draw us from the liberty the Word gives us to a superstitious Jewish heathenish practice. For deliberately and determinately to do it in reference to paradise or Christ is no better. 1 Timothy 2:8. We have liberty to pray anywhere and anyway, so it be without wrath and doubting. As his face in the East sprung from them, so it is as likely that the building of temples east and west, that the people may sit with their faces eastward and burying of the dead with their heads to the west, that they may rise with their faces eastward, came from them. However, it savors strongly of superstition, if not of heathenism, to do so. Verse 17. Then he said unto me, Hast thou seen this, O son of man? Is it a light thing to the house of Judah that they commit the abominations which they commit here? For they have filled the land with violence, and have returned to provoke me to anger, and lo, they put the branch to their nose. This verse has in it the sum of all the evils before spoken of, and an addition of something else, an appeal to the prophet for to be judged in it. Have you not seen the image of jealousy and so on? Is it a light thing? The branch to their nose. The Hebrew word for a branch is rendered by some a sound or song, as if they sung and made a noise with their nose in disgrace or contempt of God. Some render it a stink or ill savor, noting how unclean and loathsome idolaters are, that delight in impure sacrifices and corrupt worship, which are a stink in the nostrils of God and good men. We have a branch pulled or cut from the tree, which is a proper sense of the word. It comes from that Hebrew root, which signifies to cut, lop off, and so it is expressed in Numbers 13:24, the cluster or branch of grapes cut down. For the better understanding of this expression, we must know that the heathens honored their gods by dedicating certain trees to them, and when they sacrificed, they adorned their altars and themselves with some of the boughs of those trees which were so dedicated to them. To Jupiter, the beech tree was sacred, to Minerva, the olive, to Venus, the myrtle tree, to Hercules, the poplar, to Bacchus, the ivy and vine, and to Apollo, the laurel. Among the Thracians, it was a law to wear garlands of ivy when they sacrificed. The Egyptians wore garlands of ivy and bays, and the Israelites here learned from them, had branches in their hands, which they took either from the altars or heads of the sacrifices or sacrificers, and after they had put them to the idol or sprinkled them with the blood of these vile sacrifices or sweetened them with some idolatrous perfume, they put them to their nostrils and kissed them in honor of the sun. It is conceived they were branches of the laurel which were dedicated to the sun, and that they carried those branches to their houses, and often they put them to their nose in memory and honor of the sun, by virtue of whose influence a laurel did grow and receive its sweet savor. Some take it to be a proverbial speech, noting out that they were authors of their own punishment and destruction. They sin and put the branch to their nose, and this will be their destruction. Observation 1. The greatness or littleness of sin is to be measured not by man's but God's account of it. Is it a light thing to the house of Judah? They think it is so, but it is otherwise. The interrogation sets out the greatness of it. Is it so? No, it is not light, but grievous. This expression sets out the weightiness of a thing. 1 Samuel 18:23. Does it seem to you a light thing to be a king's son-in-law? No, it is a great matter for a poor man to be so advanced, whatever your thoughts are. And let men think sin a light manner, it is far otherwise. There is lead in it, and it will weigh them down. 1 Kings 16:31. Speaking of Ahab, the scripture says, And it came to pass as if it had been a light thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that he took to wife Jezebel. The Hebrew is, was it a light thing for him to commit the sins of Jeroboam? Yes, he thought so, esteemed them light, and went to serve Baal. But they were notorious and weighty sins, kingdom and church-destroying sins. Men pair and lessen their sins. They make little account of them. Proverbs 14:9. Fools make a mock at sin as an inconsiderable manner. In chapter 10:23. It is as sport to a fool to do mischief. It is no heavy thing to his conscience, but a light thing like a feather with which he can sport and play. Job 15:16. Man drinks iniquity like water. He delights himself with sin like a fish that draws in the water and spouts it out again in a sporting way. So does man. To him, sin is sweet and delightsome, Job 20:12, not burdensome. Matthew 22:5, when they refuse Christ and his offers of grace, mercy, and salvation, when they sinned with a high hand, yet they made light of it and went their ways. And in Isaiah, when they committed idolatry, fell to other gods, they looked upon it as a sporting business. Isaiah 57:4. Against whom do you sport yourself? Against whom make ye a wide mouth and draw out the tongue? What men's thoughts are of their sins, you see, they weigh them in a false balance and make them light, but when they come to the balance of the sanctuary, they will be found heavy. Is it a light thing such abominations are in our land? Observation 2. To sin where God manifests his presence and vouchsafes the means of grace and choice mercies is a great aggravation of sin and grievous provocation of divine majesty. Is it light that ye commit the abominations which ye commit here in the temple, the places of my presence, where I have given them mine ordinances and do meet them for my worship, to set their idol of jealousy near that place, have their chambers of imagery, their Tammuz brought into the temple, and women weeping about that filthy idol, and men standing with their backs towards God and worshiping the sun? This aggravated their sin and provoked bitterly. Here, they do such things. They made a calf in Horeb. Was this more than if they had made it in Egypt or some other place? Yes, Horeb was the same with Mount Sinai, if you compare Deuteronomy 4:10-11 with Exodus 19:18. It is evident. And their God appeared, gave out the law, and made a covenant with them, Deuteronomy 5:2, and it was called the Mount of God, 1 Kings 19:8. Now here they made a calf. Here they sinned, and this is a great aggravation of their sin, insomuch that Deuteronomy 9:8, Moses says, In Horeb you provoked the Lord to wrath, even destroying wrath. So touching Gilgal, the scripture speaks of Gilgal's wickedness, Hosea 9:15, a sacrificing bullocks there, chapter 12:11, and multiplying transgressions there, Amos 4:4. The Lord took their sins at Gilgal very heinously. At Gilgal were the 12 memorial stones of their passing over Jordan pitch, Joshua 4:20. At Gilgal they were circumcised, and God rolled away their reproach of Egypt from them, Joshua 5:8-9. There they had the Passover, verse 10. Gilgal being a place famous for these things, their sins at Gilgal did increase their reproach and aggravate their villainy. Where God has manifested himself and done remarkable things, sin, there is a double sin. In Psalm 106:7, they provoked him at the sea, even at the Red Sea. Where God pitied them, being in a great strait, where God showed his mighty power in dividing the seas, in leading the Israelites safely through, and in drowning the proud, cruel, bloody adversaries, yet there they provoked him, at the sea, even the Red Sea. So for Canaan, which was the Holy Land, the land of uprightness, the land where God had shown and done great things for them, sin there has an emphasis set upon it, Isaiah 26:10. There they deal unjustly, Ezekiel 20:28. When I had brought them into the land, for the which I lifted up mine hand to give it to them, for time he accents their sins. There they offer their sacrifices. There they present the provocation of their offerings. There they made their sweet savor. There they poured out their drink offerings. God has given us in this land, in this city, many choice mercies, done wonderful things for us. Shall it be said, here they commit sin, where the gospel and means of grace are, where they have lately entered into covenant with me, where they have seen my hand stretched out to do many great things? If it be so, there will be an accent upon our sins. Observation 3. Violence is a spreading sin. They have filled the land with violence, with wrong, injustice, oppression. The princes had violent hands. They oppressed and exacted of the people. Ezekiel 45:8-9. The rich men, they are full of violence. Micah 6:12. And wrong the poor sort. Servants were infected with this sin and filled their master's houses with violence and deceit. Zephaniah 1:9. The priests, they violated the law, Zephaniah 3:4, Ezekiel 22:26. They corrupted it with their glosses, forced interpretations, constructions such as God never put into it. They set by the law and set up their own inventions, wills, traditions, by which the law was made void. Thus violence had filled the land, the city, the sanctuary, and ran through all sorts of men. If freedom from the sin had been anywhere, it is probable in Jerusalem some should have been found free. But Zephaniah 3:1, woe to the oppressing city, and Jeremiah 6:6, she is wholly oppression in the midst of her. Not only oppressing, but oppression. She was thoroughly grown and perfect in that sin. And not only oppression, but holy oppression. Nothing remaining in her but oppression. And this evident, visible, in the midst of her princes, priests, rich, servants, poor, oppress, wrong, offer violence one to another. Jeremiah 5:1. Run, see, seek, if there be any that executes judgment. All were for violence, none for justice. Observation 4. Injustice is abomination to God, and the more it spreads, the greater abomination it is. The Lord calls them abominations, for they have filled the land with violence. Violence in the princes was abomination, violence in the priests was abomination, oppression in the rich was abomination, injustice in their judges was abomination, injury and wrong in their servants and officers was abomination, and all these amounted to abominations. Injustice and violence are crying sins, Isaiah 5:7. The Lord looked for judgment, but behold oppression, for righteousness, but behold a cry. There were hundreds and thousands crying because their orchards and vineyards were taken from them, their wages detained, and themselves and their houses ready to be swallowed up by the mouths of the violent. The word for oppression, behold oppression in Hebrew, is a scab, a wound, a leprosy. When a body is free from these, it is beautiful, but when overrun with these, it is loathsome. Injustice was a scab adherent to the Jews and made them abominable. Oppression was a wound and made them incurable. Violence a leprosy and caused them to be separated from the sight of God. Is our state free from this sin? May we not fear God looked for judgment, but behold oppression? A scab, a wound, a leprosy? Is not truth oppressed? Are not the righteous and innocent oppressed? And may not many of us take up that of Job in chapter 19:7, behold, I cry out of wrong, but I am not heard. Let oppressors of others, be it in their names, liberties, estates, consciences, know their sin is abomination to the Lord, and that there is a cry in heaven against them. The oppressed cry, break in pieces the oppressor. Psalm 72:4, and judge the fatherless and oppressed, that the man of the earth may no more oppress. Observation 5. State oppression and church corruption go together. In the temple were pollutions, and in the land, violence. The princes and judges say wrong men. The priests, the prophets say wrong God. Zephaniah 3:3-4. There you find them linked together. Princes and judges oppress the state. removed the bounds, the prophets and priests polluted the sanctuary and violated the law. They break both tables. When one is imminently violated, breaches are quickly made upon the other. If there be violence in a land, there will be corruptions, pollutions, abominations in the sanctuary. If there be superstition, idolatry in the church state, there will be oppression, injustice, and spoil in the civil state. When the temple is a den of thieves, the land will be a den of oppressors and murderers, Jeremiah 7, 9, and 11. Observation 6. Men's intentions to please God oft prove provocations of God. They intended not to provoke God, but returned in their apprehensions to worship God in a temple and to please Him. Not their purpose, but the event was a provocation. So in verse 6, their abominations drave God far from the sanctuary. They did not purpose and intend to drive God away, but that was the event and issue of their actions, which they thought they pleased God, Jeremiah 7, 9, and 10. Will you steal, murder, and commit adultery, and swear falsely, and burn incense to Baal, and walk after other gods whom you know not, and come and stand before me in this house and say, we are delivered? They returned from their vile and sinful practices to God's house and thought by their sacrifices and prayers to please the Lord, when, as in truth, they provoked Him greatly, as you may see in verses 12, 14, and 15, where He tells them He will destroy the temple as He did Shiloh, cast them out as He did their brethren, the whole seed of Ephraim, and forbids the prophet to lift up a cry or prayer for them, verse 16. So in Isaiah 1, 13, and 14, that which they did to please God was vain. Abomination, iniquity, trouble, hateful, such as he could not away with. Nadab and Abihu thought not to provoke God with their strange fire, but did to their own ruin, number 3 and 4. John 16:2, they shall put you out of the synagogues and think they do God good service when they kill you, saith Christ. But they provoke God against their own souls. Isaiah 7:12, Ahab thought it would please God not to ask a sign, but it was otherwise. Matthew 23:29-31. They thought they did well in building the tombs of the prophet and garnishing them, but thereby they provoked God more against themselves. Observation 7. God sets a special mark upon those that do put the branch to their nose. Lo, they put the branch to their nose. Such are, 1. Those who adorn idols and images, Isaiah 30:22. They covered their images and put ornaments upon them, but they were no better than a minstrel with cloth. In Ezekiel 16, verses 16-18, they decked their high places with colors, jewels, and embroidered garments. This provoked the Lord and is branded with fornication, verse 15, and abomination, verse 22. Have not many among us gilded and adorned crosses, altars, crucifixes, and so on? Number 2. Those who find any content and delight in superstitious and idolatrous practices, Ezekiel 16:18-19, God tells them that they have set his oil and incense before the image for a sweet savor. The Hebrew is for a savor of rest. They were pleased and rested in what they had done, thinking also that the idol was delighted therewith. Exodus 32:6, they took pleasure in their new god and danced about the golden calf. And such expressions as these you have. Their heart went after their idols, Ezekiel 20:16. Their eyes go a-whoring after their idols, Ezekiel 6:9. Inflamed with idols, Isaiah 57:5. Mad upon their idols, Jeremiah 50:38. Wish to show the pleasure they had in these evils, and how God brands them for the same. Number 3. Those that acknowledge any blessings to be from saints and images, they here adored the sun as author of trees and fruits. In Jeremiah 44:17-18, they burned incense to the Queen of Heaven and acknowledged their welfare and plenty to be from her. Papists at this day acknowledge the cure of many diseases to be from such and such saints. Number 4. Such as preserve relics in memorial of their images and gods. They touched the image with it and put it to their noses in memorial of the sun, Deuteronomy 7:26. The silver and gold that was on the images they might not desire or take unto them, lest they should be snared therein. No relics, though, never so precious, were permitted them to take. They were abomination to God and would be snares to them. Whence the rabbins observe that the idol and things which serve it are offered to it and made for it are unlawful for any use. The papists abound with relics, and so with abominations. 5. Those who give divine honor to creatures. Psalm 106:19. They worship the molten image. Jeroboam sacrificed to the calves that he had made, 1 Kings 12:32, and said to the people, "Behold thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt," verse 28. Here was divine honor given to dumb idols, but he is branded for this frequently. Jeroboam that made Israel to sin, in 1 Kings 8:34, it is said, "The thing became sin to the house of Jeroboam, even to cut it off and to destroy it from off the face of the earth." Observation 8, idolatrous worship is stinking and brings destruction to the authors. Verse 10, all the idols, in the Hebrew is all the dunghill images, and image worship, are dunghill, stinking, loathsome things to God and man, and they brought destruction upon the whole seed of Ephraim, even the 10 tribes. Psalm 106:4, their sorrow shall be multiplied, that hasten after another god. Jeroboam did so, 1 Kings 12 and chapter 13. A prophet prophesies against his altar and Kavish gods. His hand was dried up. In chapter 14, 10 and 11, most grievous things are threatened against him and his. Jeremiah 7:18 and 19, when they had sacrificed to the Queen of Heaven, "Do they provoke me to anger, saith the Lord? Do they not provoke themselves to the confusion of their own faces?" Verse 18, "Therefore will I also deal in fury, mine eyes shall not spare, neither will I have pity, and though they cry in mine ears with a loud voice, yet I will not hear them." Here is a sad epiponema, or conclusion. He had often in a chapter called upon Ezekiel to see the doings, which, being shown to him, the Lord sounds in his ears what dreadful things he will do, deal in fury, and so on. The scripture mentions God's anger, Psalm 30, verse 5, his indignation, Psalm 69:24, his wrath, Isaiah 54:8, in his fury, Jeremiah 10:25. And these exceed each the other. Anger is a displeasure of God against sin. Indignation is anger more intense. Therefore, Isaiah 30, verse 30, it is called indignation of his anger. Wrath is yet higher and permanent, according to that in Nahum 1:2. He reserves wrath for his enemies, and fury is his highest. Job 20, verse 23, the fury of his wrath. In Jeremiah 26, verse 5, fury and great wrath go together. And when God is in his fury, he rests not till he is revenged. Jeremiah 7, verse 20. My fury shall be poured out upon this place, upon man, and upon beast, and upon the trees, fruit, and ground, and burn unquenchably. Ezekiel 16:41 and 42. When Jerusalem should be destroyed, then God would make his fury to be at rest. Mine eyes shall not spare, neither will I have pity. Of these words has been spoken before. Observation 1. There is a time when God, who is patient, gracious, and slow to wrath, will deal in fury. He that delights in exercising mercy has a time for fury and trading in it. He that is patient and long-suffering has times of being furious. When is it that God will deal in fury? Number 1. When lesser judgments will not serve turn. If he threaten in anger, smite in his indignation and wrath, and there be no good use made of those strokes, then will the Lord appear in fury. Leviticus 26. God threatens them with a number of inferior judgments, and if they do not work, but still walk contrary to God, verse 28, then God says, I will walk contrary to you also in fury. If they grow worse, God would be more violent and furious. Number 2, when a reformation is offered and refused. Jeremiah 51, verse 9, we would have healed Babylon, but she is not healed. Forsake her, for her judgment reaches to heaven, and is lifted up even to the skies. So much fury should be poured out upon Babylon, that heaven, air, and earth should wonder at it. Ezekiel 24:13 and 14. Because I have purged you, and you were not purged, you shall not be purged from your filthiness any more, till I have caused my fury to rest upon you. I, the Lord, have spoken it, and so on. When God tenders a reformation to a people, it is great love, rich mercy, and mercy refused is mercy abused, and that turns into fury, and God's fury shall not only be poured out against such a people, but rest upon them. which is much more. Number 3. When men are furious against God, his servants and ways, when they cannot endure his prophets, saints, and ordinances, then is the time for God's fury to break out. When the husbandmen in the parable would not endure Christ's servants nor himself, but beat and stoned them, then fury came forth, and miserable destruction was the portion of those men. Matthew 26:35, 36, 38, and 41. When righteous Lot, being abused, was got out of Sodom, then God sent fire and brimstone upon it and poured out his fury like fire, as it is in Nahum 1:6 and 2 Chronicles 36:16 and 18. They mocked the messengers of God, despised his words, misused his prophets until the wrath of the Lord arose, and it rose very high, even to the height of fury. For he brought the king of Babylon in fury upon them, who slew their young men in the sanctuary, who had no compassion upon man or maiden, young or old. All men and all things were given into his hand. All their glorious things were burned and laid waste. This has been a reading of a commentary on the book of Ezekiel, chapter 8. This is a Puritan and Reformed audiobook podcast.